As part of Autism Awareness Month, and considering how New Jersey has an autism rate significantly higher than the national average, a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling regarding special education standards is of great interest. Rather than lower the bar for students with special needs, the court ruled that the bar should be raised, believe it or not. While most have cheered that ruling, yeah, there are actually a few who believe it's an unnecessary path to take. Here to discuss this issue is the founder and CEO of Change Light Behavioral Health Therapy and Education. He's also co-author of the book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education, Mark Claypool. Thanks for being here today, Mark.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Mark's website, chancelight.com. Learn more about the work of Change Light Behavioral Health Therapy and Education and what that all offers. So give us a brief overview as far as, and strangely enough, it was an 8-0 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. A young man who's now 17, he was diagnosed with autism at age 2, and his parents wanted, believe it or not, a better education for him, and they ran into a difficulty, and they eventually won out. How did all that happen?
Well, I think this has been brewing for a very long time. There's been great dissatisfaction in the special ed community, in the advocacy community, for many, many years, stemming back to the rather surprising ruling in 1982 when the Supreme Court ruled in the Rowley case. And the ruling sort of summarized in the court's finding said that the public school districts are not for maximizing the potential of a child in special education. This was a big surprise then, and unfortunately, it has sort of governed the tenor and the discussion around special ed for 35 years or so. Putting parents in a very litigious position against school districts, and school districts really having to conform to a very compliance-driven sort of civil rights kind of law that is really just about access and not about work. And so, I think the advocacy community really hails this as a change of course on special education. In fact, Justice Roberts, in his conclusion, said that providing a program of services that is ambitious, equal to the potential of the child. So I think that does reverse that idea that school districts are not responsible for progress. I think it also, though, opens the door, in all fairness, it opens the door to an even more expanded view of what special education means. And I think you can make the case that this is the official pronouncement that public school districts are the treatment provider of very complicated issues that fall under special education, like autism.
And that certainly goes against the grain of what parents either believe or are told districts, that we're going to slow down your son or daughter because they're not as capable of learning as the quote-unquote regular class is. To where is this a sign, too, where we're getting a greater idea of how the education process should be for autistic children and children with other types of disabilities as well?
So, I think the analysis of what these children need, what their potential is, I mean, this is somewhat fraught with peril, but at the same time, it does give parents the opportunity to push and to demand that that there be positive outcomes for their child.
Now with Mark Clayton, who is the co-author of the book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education. He's also the founder and CEO of Chance Light Behavioral Health Therapy and Education, chancelight.site, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Is there a certain system or program or process that determines the education process for a child with autism, for example?
Yes. By law, the federal law, there is process under the law IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and this process takes the form of a group of people, including the child's parents, professionals from inside the school district and outside the school district, getting on something called an individual education plan. And this plan is supposed to lay out the goals and the tools and everything that would go into an effective plan of services for a child with disabilities.
Now, I mentioned your book how autism is reshaping special education. Is that to the point where autism and the needs of the autistic child is, I guess the fair would be, provoking the special education system to do what's right, or is it reshaping as far as a means of catching up the special education process for autistic children?
Well, when we talk about reshaping, what we're observing really is the fact that the parents of children with autism have been very organized, very strong on advocacy, and very focused on a single disability, autism, rather than what has been an historic view that all boats must be lifted equally, so to speak, in special ed, that the law has been formulated around, again, access and equity, not specific progress. And if your child has autism, that's simply not enough for you, because you want your child to be very successful, and you know that that early intervention and intensive interventions will make a tremendous difference on matters like will your child be able to use language effectively? Will they be able to have social skills that will translate to independence later in life? And those are somewhat different sets of expectations than parents of children with other disabilities might have. Autism is a very dynamic disability, and that's, as the result of that, that is changing what has been sort of a static set of services in many school districts. I think it is reshaping the playing field because of that, and I think the advocacy that these parents have had, coupled with the rise of social media, which has just amplified that tremendously, and really a lot of money that has gotten behind autism around very prominent, powerful people in the media like Bob and Suzanne Wright from NBC, who really built the great organization Autism Speaks, and it's done a tremendous job of getting the message out there. I think when you talk to most people now about special ed, probably the first thing that pops into their mind would be autism. And that this just shows you how effective this advocacy is, because autism is still only the fourth most prominent or most predominant disability in the framework of special education. But it gets a disproportionate amount of the attention.
Well, that's part two, because a lot of parents, you know, human beings are what they are. They feel that they can't go against the school system. So how valuable is a ruling like this as an empowerment tool for parents to say, okay, now I know where the line is drawn. Now I know what the school is supposed to be doing better than I did before this ruling. And they become more proactive, more of an advocate for the children, as opposed to, and granted, the organizations do great work, but cookie cutter, I guess the old saying is, if you met one person with autism, you met one person with autism. You can't have a general, here's what you do program off of a national organization. The individual family and the parents have to be a lot more proactive to make sure things are right for their child.
You are absolutely right. This is changing so much, because people want what they want when they want it, and it meets their needs. And that is really the underlying idea of our book about unbundling. I think we've seen this in our culture over and over again over the last 20 years. You know, we see this in television. People don't want to buy a package of channels that they never watch. They don't want to buy an entire, to use a really archaic term, an entire album of music when they really just wanted one song. You know, we've made accommodations for these things in our culture. Now, you can have what you want when you want it. I think in our political world, we saw that in the last political election cycle for president, that when candidates like Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump bubble up to nearly the top or the top of the heap, people are sort of tired of the package deal of party politics. And I think that parents fall into that. They're tired of hearing, this is the best we can do, or we don't have those resources. When the law says, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to get the resources, public school system, you don't get to say we don't have the resources. So, you know, when the Supreme Court reaffirms this and really codifies the fact that school districts now are responsible for maximizing potential, that does empower parents far more than they've ever been empowered since these special ed laws were put on the books during the Gerald Ford administration.
And if you're listening, if you want to look up the Supreme Court ruling, it's Andrew F. versus Douglas County School District, It was an 8-0 decision by the Supreme Court. That is a great empowerment tool for parents with autistic children in the school systems. And to learn more about the work of the Chance Light Behavioral Health Therapy and Education Center, it is chancelight.com. He's also co-author of the book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education. Mark Claypool, thanks so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.